You've been wanting this since that last snowstorm in April, right, Tommy Allen?
That's right, Shelley.
Thanks, Luis, for helping him with his microphone.
No problem.
Yeah, let's talk about your brother. We'll get to that. All right, how are you, Tommy Allen?
I'm doing great. This is like such a casual roll-in today. Oh, sorry, I got to put the microphone really close to my mouth.
It keeps turning, as in my notes.
It's a casual, lefty tidy, no, righty tighty, lefty loosey. Yeah, you better.
Lefty tighty. No wonder nothing in your house is like everything's left. The switch plates are falling off.
That's the water's
running all the time. She doesn't know which one to turn.
I've turned the water off in a couple places. That's why that's called three dogs. And,
Oh, that's what three dogs do to you? Good. I'm going to stick with one because my brain's already pretty much fractured out because of it. So.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Here we are, a formal introduction because we have a good time. We inspire, entertain, and educate. Put the emphasis on entertain with this segment. Rapid Growth Media doing great things, as are you, publisher Tommy Allen. Take it away.
Thanks, Shelley. Well, you know, today, I first off want to start off by saying, like, wow, what a hot summer. I mean, it's just been very warm. And I'm reaching an age where I don't like the heat, but thank God, finally, after having a car that didn't have AC for like 7 years, literally AC in my car to replace it was going to cost as much as a car was worth. And investment-wise, AC, new car, I finally went with a new car, and I'm living the life of air conditioning finally, which is great. I find that AC really calms you down. I'm a different Tommy Allen, I guess, with AC. Who knew?
Now we know.
No music. Secret I just kind of roll in quietly today, you know? But no, we're really excited this month because we have, first off, July is always a slow month, let's be honest, and anywhere you are. Everybody's lazy, they're at the lake, no one's spending a lot of time. So Rapid Growth, we tend to be a little more easygoing too, but, you know, we had this blog, Rapid blog piece come in today, which is our version of the op-ed, and we invited Luis Avila. Did I say it right?
You did. Thank you.
I just got to make sure. Because I think for a long time you were so gentle with me when I call you Avila.
Avila.
And he was so gracious all these years. And finally, I realized, and I'm going to apologize for calling you the wrong last name for a while. But now that we're on the right path.
In all fairness, the Tigers baseball player pronounces his name Avila. So, you know, he's got a little more popularity than I.
That might be the root of it all, because occasionally I do go. Occasionally I'm in a Tiger game, not a lot. Yeah,
let's get you caught up to him in popularity.
Yeah, that's right.
This will help.
So Luis is a partner. I'm going to just share some statistics here. Statistics, that sounds so boring. Of course, everybody just tunes out right away. Oh, stats, forget about it. No, I'm just going to share. He's a partner in employment litigation and immigration attorney at Varnum. And I'm going to give a big shout out for Varnum too. Recently, Varnum put up the rainbow colors in honor of Pride Month, which was such a surprise. In fact, I'm not sure what triggered or when it triggered, but it happened on the night I was throwing my annual Love Wins at the Rainbow Bridge party. And I had people come up to me and they were like, and our bridge wasn't lit up this year, rainbow. And they're all going, Varnum's lit up rainbow. I'm like going, listen, don't rub it anymore that the city's controller broke like 2 days before our event. So we had no rainbow bridge colors. So we had to sell.
We made up for it though.
You
don't
did
worry.
Make up for it. Because people are going, Varnum is all lit up in rainbow colors. I'm like going, and we couldn't see it very well from where I was. Yep. But later on that night, I did get to see it. And I think I reached out to you to say, that was really cool. But at Varnum, you're able to also break out and do other things. And I know from the community, a lot of people know you're a board member at the West Michigan Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. You're at the Grand Rapids Community Foundation. Now, how long have you been at the board of the foundation now?
I'm not on the Community Foundation board. I was part of their program-related investment committee. I'm on the board of the Symphony, the Art Museum, the Ballet.
And you have a family and kids.
I do. You're
a lawyer. We know lawyers work weird hours and everything. So how do you fit this all in?
I don't sleep much.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you're a good company here. She doesn't sleep much. She runs a lot. When she's not here, that woman's she's probably got running shoes in her bag even, I bet, here.
Yeah.
But anyways, I want to start off by just saying she does. She picked up a stinky shoe and just shoved it in my face, folks. That's why we love Shelley, and it's July, so it's a little more casual. A little more casual, a little more real. We keep it real here. I like this piece because you're inviting others to dialogue here, and that's a really nice theme. And maybe talk about maybe the start of this. Like, how did you land at this point in this piece? Like, even, and I know it's much more than the piece. It's really, I think, how you operate.
What's the title of the piece, Tommy?
It's called Luis Avila Explores Hispanic Philanthropy in West Michigan. And what I think is really nice about this piece is that you really do invite everybody right at the start to join them. And I think, what have you learned about welcoming in an era where things are not always welcoming now. We've been moving in that direction for a long time, but I feel like lately it hasn't. And so what does it mean to you when you're inviting others to dialogue?
Well, it's really important because I often do get asked about what it's going to take to get the Hispanic community in West Michigan to get involved, seriously involved in philanthropy. And to be honest, I've heard several answers from people in the community that oftentimes couch their answers as speaking on behalf of the Hispanic community. I think that that's a dangerous thing to do. I have a personal experience, right, as a Hispanic immigrant in this country, just like every other Hispanic in this community has their experience. And you've got to speak from that, right? I am always really cautious when I hear people represent that they speak on behalf of a people. That's right. That's hard to do.
It is hard. And I'll say, you know, I'll just come out and say that one of the positions I hold now, and I had to resign from a lot of my board seats because of being the chair at the CRC, the Community Relations Commission at City Hall. It's the second year I've been elected to be the chair. And actually, I found out later on that I was the first gay man to ever sit at the head of the table.
Congratulations.
So that was kind of fun. Yeah. But even that, representing the LGBTQ, I'm often asked to speak, but I can only speak really authentically from being a gay man, not as a lesbian, not as a bisexual person, not as a transgendered individual, or not even as someone who's questioning. You know, I'm speaking from a place, but I'm often asked to speak on the whole alphabet that we own at the moment. We keep adding more letters, by the way, which is, that's really proof of our inclusion, I guess.
Exactly.
we'll take anybody else. No one else will take it. Come on, let's go. Let's get together. We're trying to build strength in numbers. But seriously, though, I do think it is a really good point to bring up, because oftentimes people are asked to speak on behalf of a community, and really from the Hispanic community, much like when we talk about the Asian community is multiple different languages. So it's not even different countries alone. It's different languages. It's different food groups. And so what I've learned over the years, a lot of times you have to be very sensitive to that when you're asking somebody for an opinion, and try to bring it back to the personal if you can.
Yep.
Do you find that speaking from a personal space, and I'm just going to say from your background, we know that you are an immigrant here.
I am.
You came here from Mexico City. I love the fact that you've spent the first 14 years of your life in Mexico City. And while he had some gap time in between, I think you were at U of M, wasn't it, for a while?
Yep. In Switzerland for a little while. Yep.
Country name dropping there. Anyways, the neutral place.
That's right.
I love Switzerland, by the way. Right. Anyways, but I love the fact that you've been here now 14 years.
Yeah, that was actually really eye-opening as I was writing this piece and trying to do the math that I have lived here in West Michigan, in Grand Rapids specifically, as long as I have in Mexico City. And I always identify myself mostly with my Mexican heritage, but I guess I should just as much with my West Michigan one.
Absolutely. And I think that's something I came to terms with being a guy from Flint. You know, when I reached that point of 18 years in Flint and 18 years here in Grand Rapids, I'm past it now by a long shot. But once I reached that point, there was something, it kind of like that year was really nice knowing that I was in a balance year, let's call it. Like looking back, looking forward. So looking forward, though, you're talking about the future of philanthropy within the Hispanic community. And one of the things that you talk about is like first and second generation. And the term I believe you refer to when we talk about money that is created in our community is remittances. And we're all very familiar with that concept, people who work in the city, that maybe explain what remittances is for the audience, so if they don't know.
Yeah, and in terms of immigrant community, remittances are money that you send back to your home country. Last year, I think it was 2 years ago, $69 billion left the U.S. to go to other countries from immigrants here. And 40% of that went to Mexico. That's a lot of money that's going to Mexican families.
Why not?
Exactly.
I think it's really interesting how we do have conversations about borders and migration and everything. But, you know, I think people always get frustrated. They say, like, well, why are they always coming here? It's like, well, where do you want them to come to? You think they're going to walk over to Russia? You think they're going to walk over to India? I mean, and we know it's on foot. We see it. You know, it's not just on foot.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Hugo Claudine in town. Years ago, I interviewed him, and I said, like, this is like 90s, we had this conversation about immigration. And I said, how do people immigrate? What do you tell people that want to immigrate to the U.S.? He goes, just get on a plane, extend your stay. And that's how a lot of people do it, actually. But we think it's interesting. We think that we're really shocked by the number, when the reality is, like, when countries are facing strife or stress or instability, there might be oppression, there might be targeting, there's gang violence, we know that happens against families. That, is a situation where every family asks themselves, am I safe where I am right now, and where can I have a better life? And so it just makes sense that one would migrate.
Yeah, the term that my family always uses is we say that we are on economic exile from our country. ways we came here because we had better opportunities. We weren't necessarily fleeing violence or anything as extreme like that. But my dad had better opportunities to work here. Opportunities that we would not have had. At that time, he was a Presbyterian pastor. Mm-hmm. There's not many of those in Mexico. So job opportunities were scarce, and he had an opportunity to lead a church here. So we moved here and have stayed here ever since. We did it by choice, but not many families get that. It's not really a choice for them.
Sure. Now, when we talk about the third generation, so we know first and second tends to be involved with remittances because there's still a really tight connection. But the third generation, I think, probably goes back to, and I'm going to slaughter the quote, but essentially the quote was something along this lines that Ben Franklin, who said that my head of the household will study law or government so that the next generation can do this, and then the third generation gets to be the artist and everything like that.
Right.
So third generation is often this like mystery thing in the gross sense of economics. So what do we see in your perspective beginning to happen, or we're seeing maybe emerging for the third generation?
Yeah, and I think that that's exactly the point of, or if you want to call it an underlying theme of this op-ed, is that the first and second generations we're going to have a much harder time connecting with them philanthropically because this isn't their community, because they're here. They often don't know if they're going to be here for too long, right? We know that a lot of immigrants are going to be here for a little while, maybe a lot longer while. But by the time they hit the third generation, they've grown up in this community. They've seen the benefits of a kid's food basket, a Grand Rapids Symphony, a art museum. They're going to grow up with this as part of their life. They might not be as inclined to send their discretionary income to family in their home country that they've never met. Maybe don't really even hear about that much anymore. They're going to be much more interested in giving back to the community that they grew up in.
The third generation, too, is exhibiting, I guess, what you'd call new loyalty.
Right.
I wrote that in some notes when I was reading this. It's like there's a new loyalty that emerges. And I think that we see that a lot with people coming to Grand Rapids beginning to adopt this city now. It's really weird because I've been here since the 80s, and I see how I reacted to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a 20-something having fun in the city like 20-somethings do today. But I'm seeing a new loyalty begin to emerge as well. There's a certain civic pride that can begin to happen. How is that a good thing for West Michigan, do you think, with the Hispanic community feeling? And I think the word is calm here, because right now things are not calm.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think that the part of the biggest problems that we face is that the Hispanic community, and again, I'm speaking in my experience from anecdotal evidence, they don't necessarily feel the first, second generations that this is their home, right? Especially if they are undocumented or they're here in any sort of visa, they're always concerned that they might actually be on a plane home, if they get picked up tomorrow or if their visa expires in a month or two. So why would they give any money to organizations in this town? Because they really have to save for the potential of one day having to start a new life elsewhere and all that. Whereas the younger generations that are born here that don't have that sort of expectation that they will leave, their loyalties are here, right? And I think that we have to kind of shift our model of philanthropy here in West Michigan to go after that community and say, you know, we care about the first and second generations, absolutely, but we are playing the long game. We're looking at the third generations, the elementary, middle schoolers, maybe even high schoolers of today, as the philanthropists of 10, 15 years from now. And that's a tough place to be in as a nonprofit, right? I mean, I get it. You don't have the budget to plan 15 years out on developing a donor base. But for this community, I think you have to.
Yes.
I think it's really, and you've served
a lot of committees and stuff over the years. So you know the importance of like having an active donor base, but also engaging this is a sizable part of our population in the growth studies. I always say where we are right now is forcing me to be a futurist because of chaos that we're trying to sort everything out. I mean, I think we're in a great, and I'm just saying a great period in the sense of like, it's great what we're going through, but I think it's a really interesting period because it's really teaching us to really be hyper aware of all those little nooks and crannies we might not have been aware of for so long. And I think that's intersectionality of being able to understand another person's struggle and then begin to move in that direction to maybe be more accommodating.
Yep. Tommy Allen with us again, Rapid Growth Media, sharing stories on a monthly basis. Luis Avila with us to talk about your latest op-ed, again, exploring Hispanic philanthropy in West Michigan. Tommy, we have 3 to 4 minutes.
Okay. Are there some things, though, that we're not able to maybe touch on? Because, you know, these kind of editorials or op-ed pieces tend to be, you know, they're limiting. Mm-hmm. You know, but are there some things that, you know, that are like maybe beyond this, that maybe steps beyond this to think about, or just to tease the audience with a little bit? It's like maybe where we're heading, that futurist thinking maybe, or?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I briefly touch on here, but that I always try to hammer home, because I don't think that we've quite gotten there as a community, is this idea that Hispanics are Hispanics. Hispanics are Mexicans, they're Puerto Ricans, Cubans, Guatemalans, Salvadorans, and we've got to treat them as such, right? You don't just treat a European as a European. You treat them as whatever country they're from.
Correct.
And while it is much easier, and I understand it, and I use the term as well, to refer to this large group of Spanish-speaking individuals from another country as Hispanics, we've got to recognize the subtleties and sometimes big differences in their culture, in mm-hmm. their countries, and that's where they're from. I don't identify myself as a Hispanic. I identify myself as Mexican, right? That's what I am. That's where I was born. Just like any other Hispanic that you talk to, right? So when we're trying to cater to this community in whatever spectrum it is, not even just in the nonprofit sector, you've got to get better at recognizing those differences, right? That you can't just treat people as, oh, well, you all speak Spanish and you all like mariachi music. Well, no, right? Gross oversimplification of pretty rich cultures.
And I think it's interesting, too, to remember, too, that the idea of this term of Hispanic was a term that's a very colonialist, you know,
exactly.
idea.
Yeah.
And if you're really reading today, a lot of the articles that are coming out, you're hearing the term post-colonialism. And it's really nice that we're starting to see these words. We always see words enter the yeah. culture sometimes before we fully understand them. We're starting to see them emerge. What I like about post-colonial is it's asking us to reevaluate the terms and labels we may have given each other.
Exactly.
I mean, as a gay man, I've had to be very comfortable with letting go of some terms and some language that we've used for years, because we realize that they're not really, they were never created by us. They were just given to us.
Yep.
And so taking it back and having ownership is so important. So I'm really encouraged to hear you say that and to share that perspective today.
Great. Ready for a wrap up, Tom?
Well, as I always say every month, you know, when I end my editorial, the future needs all of us, and never more than ever do we need to remember that this is a very diverse city. This is a very growing city. I mean, yeah. It's incredible growth. Who would have thought we called ourselves Rapid Growth all those years ago in 2006? And I mean, we sat in Four Friends Coffee, which is not even around anymore. That shows you the strength of the community changing over. How exciting it is to be here in this era and to have this opportunity being Grand Rapids at this time of change. So I'm glad along the journey I've met you and we've had chances to talk, but thank you for coming on the air today.
Thank you both.
More information, where do we get a hold of you?
Any one of his boards. No, which one? Or at Varnum. No, go ahead.
LEAVILA at VarnumLaw.com.
Awesome.
Shoot me an email. Let's have a discussion.
And of course, we're always at rapidgrowthmedia.com, where free publication comes out every Thursday. Thank
Great.
You, Shelley.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.